The J-Talk Podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, I have to begin this week's episode with kudos for yourself and John Steele on your superb showing in last week's Patreon-exclusive review of the big games from Wednesday's J1 and J2 match days. Absolutely terrific stuff.
Well, thank you very much. I had a good time doing it. It looks like we haven't run any of the patrons off just yet, so hopefully they stick around for next month. But yeah, it was good to get involved in that. It was good to just be able to focus on one game for once, which I haven't been able to do all season. So yeah, really enjoyed the format, and I'm sure we're going to have a few more of those to come throughout the rest of the season.
Most definitely, as the fixtures continue to come chunky and rapid. So tremendous viewing, and the reviews from our patrons are glowing. And before we welcome in this week's guest, a big welcome on Patreon to our two newest supporters on there, Khalil and Tokyo Fox. Fantastic to have you both on board. And finally, I'm putting out an APB on Sven Uphoff. Sven, if you're listening, I've got a pack of J-League cards and a badge and a sticker with your name on them. Please get in touch with your address. Otherwise, we're putting out a missing persons bulletin out on you. Still haven't heard from you. Please check your Patreon inbox. All right, then. That's it for our Patreon update for this week. Now, to help us wrap up all the drama of the weekend's match day 16, it's our great pleasure to welcome the man behind JSoccer Magazine and JSoccer.com back to the pod, Alan Gibson. How are you?
Fine, thank you very much. Good morning, good evening, goodbye, wherever you happen to be. It's great to be here.
Fantastic to have you along for the duration of this episode, Alan. Very nice of you to agree to stick with us all the way through. Regular listeners obviously will know that the Kansai area is very much your sphere of influence when it comes to the J-League. But obviously, you very much pay attention to the league as a whole, and indeed all three divisions of the J-League, and further down the pyramid as well. We're all well aware of that, and appreciate the attention you pay to the Japanese game as a whole. But as is our custom when you're on the pod, we'll begin with the three Kansai clubs, and very much contrasting results for the three of them in match day 16, Alan. So this week we will begin our chat by talking about the team in second place in the table, Cerezo Osaka, who carried on their winning ways on Sunday evening, Alan, with a terrific come-from-behind victory away at the defending champions, the Yokohama F. Marinos. Cerezo second in the table, very much on merit, and this is another superb result for them.
It was lovely, wasn't it? They are definitely there on merit. Yokohama F. Marinos, four or five games in a row they've lost again now since they looked like they were getting back into it. Cerezo, I think, have lost two games all season, and I think they have the I think I say this every time, they have a superb defence. Seko is looking national team material, especially when he's alongside Jonic, which of course is most games. And Jonic is excellent. He's not the captain on the field, but he's captain material, and he runs that defence very well. And Kim Jin Hyun at the back. So they've got a great defence, and they just do what they need to do, and then they score goals, and they've actually started scoring a few more goals than they had done early in the season. I think last season also 1-0 was their favourite result, I think. And they've actually started scoring games where they've scored two goals quite often, including ones, of course, when they concede early on. And this one was great. Kiyotaki's goal was wonderful. It was Sakamoto again. We've talked about him as well, haven't we? But young Sakamoto on the right wing, or right inner channel, setting up Kiyotaki for that lovely little lob over the keeper. And the keeper was, he wasn't even far out of his goal, was he? And then he came back, and Sakamoto was working hard again on the right and just got one over there. And it was like little Takagi just nonchalantly plopped it in and turned around and walked back. It was great. Cerezo, as you said, on merit, but of course they are definitely the team to beat, apart from Kawasaki at the top, of course.
Yes, indeed. All right, so a terrific come-from-behind win for Cerezo at the defending champion, Sam. But I guess, it could be argued that F. Marino should have been out of sight by the time the hour rolled around and Hiroshi Kiyotake was equalising for Cerezo, because F. Marino's had some golden chances. They hit the woodwork a couple of times. They could have just about been out of sight and over the hill and far away.
Yes, Cerezo, I thought, rode their luck a little bit for a good portion of this game. A lot of it was good defending. I have to agree with Alan. I think Jonic and Seco at the back are fantastic. But in this game, there was slices of luck. There was the one where Eric had a shot. It bounced off the underside of Kim onto the crossbar, onto the post. And then Junior Santos headed it, and then it was cleared off the line. There were other chances. Eric had another good effort from 25 yards, hit the crossbar. And yes, Yokohama should have been two or three goals up, I think. They did get their goal eventually through Eric. But that was a little bit fortunate because Marcos Jr. was offside as the ball goes across to him. He gets the cross in and Eric finds a bit of space and heads it in. But yeah, after that, Cerezo grew into it. They got, I think, Kajikawa's out of position really for Kiyotake's goal. As good as Kiyotake's finish is, he's a bit too far to the left-hand side of his goal for whatever reason, and you can't give Kiyotake any sort of chance to produce that sort of lob. It was an exquisite goal, and once again it was just Cerezo with Sakamoto and Kiyotake, who together have combined so well coming off either flank, and they're the ones behind Cerezo's bit more clinical nature going forward. And then you've got to think there was also the red card. Ito was caught out by Katayama. I think it's a clear red card as Katayama was going in on goal. But yeah, Yokohama a little bit shooting themselves in the foot at the back, which definitely helped Cerezo. But from them getting level Cerezo, I thought they did pretty well. There were still chances for Yokohama. But yeah, decent result. I think I'd be saying it was more even than a 2-1. I thought Yokohama probably deserved something from the game, but you can't take anything away from Cerezo and the way they finished their chances.
Yeah, most definitely. So, yeah, Eric gave F. Marinos the lead 7 minutes into the second half with a header from Marcos Junior's cross. But then, yes, just 6 minutes later, Hiroshi Kiyotake produced a sublime first-time strike from 25 yards over and exposed Yuji Kajikawa in the F. Marino's net, as Sam has mentioned. And, the red card for Makito Ito in the 65th minute. I don't know, with putting your refereeing cap on, Alan, I mean, that's the correct decision, isn't it? I mean, Katayama was zooming away and Ito was the last man 35, 40 yards from goal. I mean, that's a red card every single day of the week, isn't it?
Yep, definitely a red card. No problem with that decision. There was a problem with an earlier decision that should also have been a red card. Did we see my tweets? And Sam, do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't, to be honest. Which one was
that? It was Hatanaka. Yes, I do. I actually tweeted it as well. And Okano was through on goal and Hatanaka was pulling his shirt. And it was like the shirt was like stretching like a wonderful advertisement for Puma. Because some of those shirts have fallen to pieces, but I mean, he was ripping the shirt off his back, and then didn't see the referee say anything like play on or advantage or anything like that. So basically, you just didn't give it, and it was such an obvious. I mean, I can't believe that. I mean, I actually took the film and put it on Twitter because I couldn't. I mean, I'd been giving a go at the referees for the last few weeks, and as you say, as a referee myself, it's incredible how much is being allowed in Japan right now, and I wonder if it's a good thing or a bad thing. I think it's a bad thing, and I'm wondering if somehow the J-League have discussed these things and are just allowing, I mean, the foul throws and people stop standing in front of free kicks and delaying free kicks and running away with the ball and throwing it back. I've actually tweeted twice in the last couple of weeks also, if anybody has seen a yellow card this year in the J-League for free kick delaying, I want to see it because I haven't seen one. And I'm thinking that it's a intentional thing by all the referees to not give cards unless they really have to. And to me, it's just allowing more cheating. So I think in this case, it was the most obvious foul that you've ever seen. It stopped the player getting the clean shot in on goal. And then it was in the area and it was one-on-one and it was a goal-scoring opportunity. As they're saying on DAZN these days, the dog zone is a very popular thing to say now, denying an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. And it just wasn't given. So I was very relieved to see that red card actually was given to Ito later. So, yes, it was a red card, and check out the other one if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, I've just gone onto your Twitter and just had a quick look at it. It's one where Okuno's going through and he stays on his feet, which is one where you don't want to encourage a player to go down, but if he goes down, I think it's always a penalty and a red card, and it's just one where you need a strong referee to be able to give the decisions, even if the player isn't going to go down to ground, because, yeah, he's got a clear pull of his shirt. It's kind of halfway across. Yeah, he's pulled it almost halfway off him. So, yeah, I think that is a foul, but they don't usually get given when players are honest and stay on their feet.
Nail on the head. You see, there's another thing I keep going on and on about on Twitter, so my apologies, but if a player doesn't go down and he's too honest, and I think it happened twice on last weekend when Iniesta was fouled near the edge of the area, a perfect place for a free kick, and he stayed up as if it's like, I'm not going down because I'm the star player, you know? And he should have gone down and he could have got free kicks, and it happens to quite a few good players. And I think referees need to give free kicks when players don't go down more often so that everyone will learn.
Yeah, fair enough then. So, yeah, the correct decision given against Ito there. But, yes, actually, the Okuno one did make the DAZN highlights, Alan, so I was aware of that. And I guess it probably made the highlights because it was a chance and Okuno actually got his shot away and it was saved. But, yeah, I mean, it's hopefully some of the DAZN watchers were able to check that out as well and maybe, yeah, come to the same conclusion that you and, well, every sane person that sees that video comes to, and that, yeah, it should have been a penalty in itself. But anyway, I guess, Cerezo left Nissan Stadium very, very satisfied after Toshiyuki Takagi's winner. 4 minutes from time, so, a terrific come-from-behind victory for Cerezo Osaka. And, well, if there was any doubt before this match day that Cerezo were the most likely challengers to Kawasaki at the top of the table, well, it was confirmed on Saturday night, so before Cerezo played, obviously, so I guess in terms of a timeline, this doesn't quite mesh. But, one of the two games on Saturday night saw a third-placed FC Tokyo visit Kobe, and Tokyo were seconds, well, not quite seconds, but a couple of minutes away from a fourth straight league win, only for a Dankler to power in a thundering header from Andres Iniesta's free kick. And, saw Kobe earn a point in a 2-2 home draw against FC Tokyo. So, Sam, I'll come to you first on this game. It was, as I say, as a Tokyo supporter, just minutes away from what I thought was going to be another impressive away victory, only to have, 2 points snatched away from us at the death. But I guess from a neutral perspective, at the end of the day, this is probably just about a fair result. I mean, Tokyo close to hanging on, but I can't really begrudge Kobe a point over the course of the 90 minutes.
Yeah, this is a game I've only been able to catch the highlights on. It was on Saturday, so I had a lot of work to do for the Sunday games. And over here, Free Sports seem to be run by Barry Valder, so we'll always put the Shimizu game on. So I've only caught the highlights of this. But thankfully, I've got the two perfect people on the pod to cover this game for me. But yeah, looking from the highlights, it looked a very even game. It looked quite open game. I think first half, it looked like Kobe were the ones on the break. Furuhashi got a lot of space, but then second half, Tokyo seemed to be the team on the break. Adelton and Oliveira and those sort of players. Yeah, so it looked a quite an even game. So from what I saw, it looked like obviously a late goal is a blow to any team, but it looked like it was a deserved point for Vissel. But I think you two might be in a better place to discuss this one.
Well, yeah, Alan, Kobe, you've obviously struggled for results in the last month or so. So I guess, snatching a point when they were, looking like they weren't going to get one late on that would qualify these days as a decent result for them. So I don't know, how do you think Kobe will be feeling overall? I mean, after taking the lead, I guess in the first place, they will have been disappointed to go behind.
I think they're probably very disappointed, especially as it could have been 16-0 by half-time. I'm sorry, just kidding. But, yeah, I mean, they ran the first half, in my opinion. Furuhashi just hit the bar just before he crossed it back for Yasui to score as well. And the key point was that Vissel actually They started off, they didn't even take these stupid little free goal kicks where they pass the ball around seven times around the area before finally sending the long ball anyway. They actually got on with it and they took some long goal kicks, and there were some long and fast balls over the top to Furuhashi, who was obviously outrunning the defence. And it was a different Kobe in the first half, and they could have been up two or three goals. And then the second half, obviously, Hasegawa Kenta probably said something and broke a few teacups against the wall and turned his hairdryer on or whatever they do. And the Brazilian boys came out, literally, they were storming ahead and running for goals. And I don't know, but Vissel seemed to slow down and start passing the ball around and taking those stupid little goal kicks, etc. And then every time, Vissel did go for goals. I mean, it was not like they were trying to hold on to the 1-0 lead. So they would send up six, seven players over the halfway line, and then suddenly they'd lose the ball. And it's like they just weren't quick enough, or maybe couldn't be bothered to go back. So every time one of those Brazilians got the ball, it looked like actually Tokyo were going to score. And of course they did. They scored two. And then Vissel Kobe sort of woke up again and started realizing that they were losing it and started playing the quick balls again and looked better. But, in the end, it was a set piece, and anything can happen from those things. I mean, people will say, oh, Iniesta's free kick was swung in brilliantly. No, it was just a free kick. It was Dankler who got stuck in and scored the goal. So, in the end, I saw the Vissel that we should be seeing in the first half, and then I saw the Vissel that we've been seeing for most of the season in the second half, and then suddenly they came back again. So, I'd say, On balance, Vissel Kobe have not won in like five games, but they've drawn four of them, including a game against Kawasaki Frontale. So they're doing reasonably well. I think the problem with Vissel, if we can sort of digress from the game, is that it's pretty obvious to me, well, as an insider too, I can say this without being told off by anyone, I suppose, but I know that they were concentrating on the ACL this year. And now, of course, there's no ACL. I think they won their first two games quite comfortably, rotated the team a little bit. And now that there's no ACL, they're really not sure whether there's going to be an ACL and whether to go for the league. You know, it sounds like a bit like an excuse too, but they weren't really too interested in the league this year. And now they're stuck in no man's land and wondering what to do. So, I think in the end, to get back to your original story, yes, it was probably a fair result, and Vissel were probably relieved in the end to get the draw. That's the fourth draw in five games.
Yeah, most definitely, and an eighth stalemate of the season in 17 games. So, Kobe, the draw masters so far this season. It was Takuya Yasui who gave Kobe a 24th-minute lead that came via an assist from Kyogo Furuhashi, who, as Alan had mentioned, had just smashed a shot against the woodwork before the rebounder found its way back to him. But yeah, by the time 15 minutes were up in the second half, Tokyo were ahead, and it was a Brazilian double with a Dialton equalising, and then Diego Oliveira putting them ahead. His goal came about after a passage of play in which Yasui actually gave the ball away, and he's tried to scramble back and track back, but unfortunately it wasn't quite able to keep up with the ball and the Diego Oliveira, and he finished with a crisp shot at the near post. But yes, in the 93rd minute, Dankler's powerful header earned Kobe a point. And all right, well, wrapping up our trio of Kansai clubs then, Alan, is Gamba Osaka. And Kobe, I guess, were relieved to get a point at the death, but overall will have been slightly frustrated from this Saturday night home game against FC Tokyo. Gamba Osaka, their staff and players will just be absolutely losing their minds, I imagine, after, pretty much dominating bottom club Shonan Bellmare. But then, highway robbery, how would you classify this? Shonan winning 1-0 away at Gamba.
Indeed, it was unbelievable. I mean, the goal wasn't even really a cross or a pass to anyone. It was just sort of poked back across the goal. And Gamba's defence that had done so well before then, Müller thought there was nobody behind him and just let it go. And Takao was there thinking that Müller was going to get it, so he let the player come through from behind and he just sort of poked it past a very surprised Higashiguchi. I was I got a question for Sam about this game later, I suppose. But because to go for your point is Gamba were extremely upset with the loss, I'm sure. The good thing is they've got so many youngsters coming through. There's no relegation this year, etc. The question is, are they trying to get an ACL place or are they trying to rebuild? So perhaps Sam can analyse the kids that have come through as well. But my question would be, Sam, do you know, because I've asked on Twitter today as well, so you may have seen it, on the J-League website, it says, for example, Gamba, 15 shots, Shonan, 8 shots. But I sat there with a pen for all the game, and I had Gamba, 24 goal attempts, and Shonan, 11 goal attempts. What's a goal attempt and what isn't? And the second question, it says Gamba, 12 free kicks, Shonan, 9. But for me, Gamba only gave away 7 fouls. So when it says Gamba, 12 free kicks, is that the ones that they committed or the ones that they received? Do you know? And I'm very interested in that because no one else has answered. So completely digress, my apologies. Go ahead.
Well, I guess it all depends on who's creating the stats and who decides what, because you can have a free kick as a result of an offside as well, and it various things. So who knows what they're giving. Shots as well, I think different places will have different opinions on the blocked shots, for example. If it's blocked instantly, some would say that's still a shot, some would say no, it was just a collision and whatnot. So, yeah, there are various different ways of interpreting these sorts of things, so it very much depends on what company or what, whoever's recording these statistics to say what they deem is anything. So there's no definitive way about it, which is why the stats for J-League games and any other games so will differ with the league, with various like Opta or whoever might be recording the statistics. So, yeah, there's no one direct way of going about it.
Oh, so thank you for not really answering it and me wasting lots of people's time.
You're very welcome.
Well, it's interesting though, Alan. Yeah, you've said that, because I usually get my stats from the J-League data site where, says 15 shots to 8. But while you were both talking, I just Googled J-League scores and I clicked on the Gamba versus Shonan result, and it says that Gamba had 22 shots to Shonan's 11. So
See, that's more like it, right? That's pretty much what I had.
Right, so I don't know,
It's weird, huh?
I've noticed there's been differences between the DAZN stats and the final J-League data stats as well. So, yeah, goodness knows who we can actually rely on. But, it sounds you watched the game and you kept count, so it sounds like the Google machine is the best one to go by.
And it seems to me that, when you look at the stats and Gamba only had 15 to 8, and then somewhere else, and in my opinion, Gamba had 23 or 24, it sort of shows how different the game was. You can count the corners, for example. I think Consadole had 9 or something on against Reds when Reds only had 1, but we'll come into that later maybe. So I'm interested in the stats a lot recently because I think it's... And I know that, you take, for example, the Premier League, if I may digress again, the Premier League has just restarted, and I think at least half of the team's shirts are now sponsored by betting companies. So these betting companies are literally betting, I know most of them are betting on the results of games, but some of them are betting on corners, some of them are betting on the next throw-in. And so who has the real stats, has the actual stats there? And I wonder if these betting companies ever have any problems. It's quite interesting. But I've been checking out the stats, and I'm getting more into stats a bit recently. Trying not to tweet about it too much because it's pretty boring, and I've already spoken too much about it too. So Sam, about the actual game.
A game of football did play. I thought Gamba huffed and puffed for a long while, but didn't really create too much clear cut. I just thought Gamba looked a little bit tired. They had a lot of possession, but they were a team that have just played as much as they can, almost the same team every game, which is going to be so difficult with the way these fixtures are. And we've seen how well Kawasaki, for example, have been able to change their squad about, keep it fresh and not really lose anything. But Gamba, I just think you could name pretty much eight of the team will always play a game, and it's caused a few injuries. Gajima, I think, is a big miss in midfield, as well as Yuki Yamamoto has done since coming in. I just think Gajima just has that little bit more wherewithal about him in that defensive midfield position. I just think Yamamoto positionally is not quite there yet, but he looks a very good player, another one off the ranks at Gambro Saka, who could go on to be a very good player. But yeah, I just thought it was quite a tired performance. Shonan then took the lead, and then really Gamba sparked into life, had a lot of chances towards the end. Sami had a couple just go wide, Adam Ilson crashed one off the crossbar, but it was just one where I think Gamba are running out of steam a little bit this season. I just don't know if they've got enough depth necessarily. I mean, you can always dip into your under-23 teams. I know Shoji Toyama, for example, is scoring a lot of goals. Shuhei Kawasaki has come in for a few bench appearances, always looked bright when he has played. So there are I'd like to see Gamba maybe more so dip into that now, because it's not like you're out of the running for a Champions League spot, but you're down now in eighth. It might be maybe give it a month or so, see where they are in terms of can they push for this ACL place, and then it might be the perfect time to just blood in a lot of these youngsters, and if they can get 10 games or so under their belts this season, I think that'll only be good for Gamba next season.
You're welcome to push back there, Alan, if you like.
What I find interesting is Miyamoto Suniyasu, Gamba coach, manager in my language. And you say he's playing Yajima, and he has been playing Yajima. Now he's playing Yamamoto. That's that sort of volante. But Ideguchi, for example, is the ideal volante for me. Kurata can play there, and of course Endo is on the bench. So it's interesting that Sune is rotating the team enough to get the players, the young players, in and giving them the chances. I mean, I think Fukuda is playing out of his skin, and I like the fact that he does get stuck in and throws his shoulder about. I think if pushed, he's got a little bit of malice about him even, which is missing a lot in Japan. And Takao, who was playing centre-back in a back three last weekend, somehow was bombing down the right wing just as much as Onose at times. And that one time when he beat a couple of players, made a 1-2, and then shot against the keeper was incredible. So I think that Sune is rotating quite a little bit. But also it's interesting that Gamba's under-23 team, more and more of them are coming up to the first team. And until last season, if a player made it into the first team squad, they were never considered for the under-23 team again, which was interesting for me. And the year before that, when Sune was actually manager of the under-23s, he actually told me that almost every week he would lose a player to the first 11 and they wouldn't come back. So he was forced to bring in more and more players. And Gamba's under-23 team usually has no overage player, or recently the goalkeeper, because they've had two injured goalkeepers and Tani is out on loan. But they've literally got 4 or 5 16 and 17-year-olds in there. And the average age of the under-23 team is about 19. So it's like they really are using it to their advantage and for the idea that what it's for. They're not bringing 3 or 4 over 23 players to bring in. And once the player goes up there, he wasn't coming back. Now, I haven't seen the under-23 squad for the last couple of games, but I don't think the likes of Kawasaki or Yamamoto are being considered for the under-23s anymore. But I'll have to check that out, because I know that the under-23s are so short now because a lot of them are moving up to the top team, that they're either playing with 9 or 10 school kids now, or they are actually taking some of these guys back down again. Certainly interesting. But Sune's got the players. As you say, well, Toyama is the one everybody's talking about. And Gamba do, for me, and for a few people on Twitter, I noticed, have a problem up front in that they don't seem to have a real presence. They've got a bit like the Japan national team, perhaps. They seem to have 4 or 5 great attacking midfielders. But Usami is being pulled back and he's not really playing as a centre-forward. Adam Ilson is more of that kind of guy too. And it's just an ageing Patrick who comes on as a substitute and he does well and gets stuck in. But they haven't really got that sort of presence up front that James Rodriguez might do, for example. I heard he's available. Oh, no, Everton took him. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to complain about Gamba's selection right now, and but as you say, they are going to get tired. And perhaps Miyamoto has learnt from Akira Nishino a little bit too much, because I think when he won the championship in 2005, I think he probably used about 14 players as his main 11 all the way through the whole season. Well, of course, Miyamoto was there then, so he might have learnt a bit too much from Nishino there. But yeah, tiredness is creeping into Gamba, but it's creeping into a lot of teams. I'm sure later on we'll discuss Sagantosu's revival and the fact that they've had a little break and they don't look tired. So we shall see. It's a big thing because of the season being squeezed into, well, literally 3 months less than it should be. It's going to be a big problem. Over to you.
Yes, indeed. All right. Well, yeah, we'll wrap things up from the Panasonic Stadium on Sunday night then. So, a huge result for Shonan. Just a second league win of the season that saw them haul themselves off the foot of the table. And, no question it was a smash and grab from Belmare. But, I take Sam's point that there's no denying that Gamba had the better chances before Kazunari Ono gave Shonan the lead in the 74th minute. But yeah, they weren't really able to test Daiki Tomi in the Shonan goal. Lots of shots directly at the goalkeeper or from distance, fairly easily dealt with by Tomi. So I don't know, Alan, you might have sold Daiki Kaneko's ball for Ono's goal a little bit short, I reckon. I rate that ball from Kaneko, and it was smartly finished by Ono. I can understand you if we cut you open, you bleed blue and black, but I think from a Shauna perspective, that was a brilliant goal, an excellent ball from Kaneko, and well converted by Ono. And then, Sam's right. Basically, Gamba woke up after the shock of going behind. Usami, a couple of chances fired narrowly wide. And then, Adamilson's strike from 25 yards in the 91st minute. Well, if you were to head over to the Panasonic Stadium right now, I reckon the crossbar would still be shaking from the force of that strike. And unfortunately for Gamba, Patrick was unable to steer his follow-up header on target. So, Gamba, a frustrating loss, no question. But from a Shonan perspective, they'll be wrapped, obviously, with just a second league win of the season. And, so that wraps up a very contrasting weekend for the Kansai clubs. Cerezo continuing to, push Kawasaki not quite all the way. They're still 8 points behind, but, they are by far the most likely challengers now. Kobe with their draw, and unfortunately for Gamba, a disappointing defeat. All right, well, we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll wrap up the other six games from the Match Day 16 slate. All right, welcome back. Leaders Kawasaki Frontale were the only top six team to play at home in Match Day 16. And, didn't they make it worth their fans' while at Todoroki on Sunday evening? A blistering display early in the second half completely took the game away from Hiroshima. That came after Ao Tanaka had given them a 14th-minute lead, blasting home at the near post after playing a 1-2 with Miki Yamane. But, Sam, if Hiroshima were quite content to get to the Sheds just at 1-0 down, 6 minutes after the restart, it was well and truly game, set and match.
Yeah, they weren't anticipating the cheat code that Kawasaki had to bring Oshima and Mitoma on at halftime, because they thought they'd done quite well to get through to 1-0. But yeah, just the same pretty much as they did against Yokohama, where the start of the second half, they just come out all guns blazing and they scored. They were, 4-1 up by the 51st minute. It was just pretty ridiculous the way that they were scything through. Mitoma, just first time he got the ball, he then takes on about four players, gets to the byline and cuts it back to Damiao. He's in fantastic form, and so are Kawasaki, because Hiroshima would have come into this game. They rested six players in midweek, so came out with their full-strength team for this one. And then Kawasaki really was as second-string as they've been all season. Taniguchi was given a rest. Oshima, Inaga, Kobayashi, all on the bench. And Mitoma as well on the bench. So it looked like if Hiroshima had any chance of getting a result against Kawasaki, this was the game. But yeah, it's the second time this season they've put five past one of the best defences in the league. And I mean, we're running out of superlatives for them. They were just, especially that second half burst, they were fantastic.
Yeah, it's just phenomenal, isn't it, Alan? The way they're just able to take a game completely away from an opponent in such a short stretch of time. In this case, it was three goals in 4 minutes shortly after the break. As Sam's mentioned, Leandro getting the second, then Kazuya Yamamura smashing in from 25 yards, and Altanaka completing his brace, dinking over the Hiroshima keeper after a lovely ball in from the right from Manabu Saito. It's, just as Sam said, as close to a second string as they're going to get, but they're just able to absolutely click into gear, and it's frightening, isn't it?
It is. It's pretty amazing that they've got so many good and young players coming through. It was interesting for me to see Kazuya Yamamura get on and score a goal, because I really rated him at Cerezo, and I think maybe even on a pod about, I don't know, 6 or 7 years ago, whenever it was, close to the World Cup, and we were talking about outsiders for the World Cup, and I had suggested that he could even make the World Cup squad because he can play at the centre-back, midfield and forward, and he was having a good time at that time, and then he sort of moved on to Kawasaki Frontale, where he's like basically about 23rd in the pecking order. But so it was nice to see him, and he just sort of whacked the ball into the corner and sort of turned around nonchalantly without any celebration whatsoever. And as I talk, as I say that now, I'm thinking, was that some kind of protest that he wasn't playing? I think at the time I thought it was just like, yeah, I can do it too. Yeah, but it was great, and the fact that they've got players like, Miyashiro Ienaga even came on in the 89th minute just to rub salt into the wound. You know, last year's excellent MVP player. Oh, we'll stick him on for a couple of minutes at the end, shall we? And, and the referee gave him a penalty kick when they were 4-0 up as well. They're still 4-0, right? Yeah. Asano didn't score his goal until like the 90th minute, so. So we'll give them a penalty kick because they haven't scored enough goals already. So, yeah, Kawasaki, I think they have 52 goals in, 19 games they've had? I'm not sure.
17, yeah.
But 17, even better. So they're exactly halfway through the season and they have 52 goals. So the obvious question is, can they make 100 this year?
Well, yeah, I don't think anybody's putting anything past them, Sam.
Yeah, I'd definitely go with it. I just want to mention Yamamura, as Alan brought up. I'm just stealing this, I admit, from Dan Orlowitz on Twitter, but I think it should be mentioned. Yamamura dedicated his goal to his third child, who passed away after only 2 months old earlier this season. So, yeah, it's obviously meant a lot to Yamamura, and I'm really happy for him that he's managed to put in an absolute belter of a goal.
And that would explain his sort of a poised celebration too. Excellent, thank you.
Yeah, well, 100 goals, Alan, I certainly wouldn't put it past them. And, thanks, Sam, for mentioning that. I wasn't aware of the significance of the goal for Yamamura, so that's, fantastic for him to score that goal in memory of his son. So, 52 goals, and obviously the goal difference is still far and away, if you like, the second highest scorer in the league, as Kawasaki's goal difference of 36 is well and truly clear of the league's second highest scorers. Kashiwa Reysol have scored 32 goals in their 16 games. Of course, with Kawasaki having a game moved forward against Kobe due to Kobe's later ACL commitments, they have now played half of their schedule. And 44 points through 17 games, i.e. half a season, is the record for the most points a team has taken in a J1 season in the first half of a season. And 52 goals, there might have been a couple of teams that have scored more in the history of the J-League, but I can't imagine there have been too many. And obviously that's a huge feather in Kawasaki's cap, the spread of goals throughout the squad. Yamamura, obviously, just the latest to get in on the act this season. As Alan's mentioned, Kawasaki were given a penalty right at the death. The Yu Kobayashi replaced Leandro with 20 minutes to go and got his customary goal off the bench from the spot this time, with Yuya Asano getting the scantest of consolations for Hiroshima in the 90th minute. It was probably the best goal of the game, but the scanters of consolations, as I said, for Hiroshima on an evening where they were thoroughly outclassed, and Hiroshima ninth in the table. They've played 15 games so far this season. They obviously have a game to make up against Tosu down the line. All right, well, joining FC Tokyo in the list of teams in the top four who were left to rue their result from the weekend was at Nagoya Grampus, who travelled to Yokohama FC. And, things were looking pretty good early doors as Yutaka Yoshida fired an absolute rasper into the top corner from 25 yards in just the 12th minute. And, Sam, I'm going to cut myself off here. Does Yoshida's goal, does that just about qualify as a top three goal of the season contender? Do we need another poll?
Well, I think it gets into the top three. I'd still go for Thomas Deng. There's something delightful about the way that went in, skidding off the turf. But yeah, Yoshida's goal was incredible. Right into the top corner. He couldn't have placed it any better. Just a perfect technique. I'd definitely have him top three. Whether maybe by popular demand we can have a poll, but I'd still have Thomas Deng just about ahead of him.
Kiyotake, what about him? We just wonder about
Kiyotake.
The goalkeeper is in position for this.
Yeah,
one.
I reckon. Yeah,
that's true. That's true. I mean, for me, the goal by Ideguchi was absolutely amazing because he was almost on the halfway line when the corner kick was about to be taken, and in fact he was out of camera and you couldn't see him in the replays. You couldn't see how far, and he's actually running like hell and taking the ball as he's running on the volley, and the keeper got a hand to it as well. It was Yosuke Ideguchi because he was wearing blue and black, obviously.
Well, that's it, Alan. Yeah, the people have spoken. Yeah, we've already done a poll and Ideguchi was in it, and Furuhashi.
It's true.
Furuhashi's goal, and obviously Deng as well. So yeah, Deng is the people's champion at the moment. And I agree, Sam. I think Yoshida definitely gets an honourable mention, probably top five so far this season, but maybe not quite good enough for us to wheel another poll out. But it was a spectacular strike from the Nagoya right back. And Yokohama FC, if they were shook by going behind in such a fashion, well, they definitely regained their composure, because just 10 minutes later they were 2-1 ahead. Firstly, Kosuke Saito swept home first time with his shot proving too hot for Mitch Langerak to handle. And then after some pinball wizard following a corner, Masakazu Tashiro blasted a shot in off his fellow defender Takaaki Shichi in the 22nd minute. Shichi correctly given the goal at the end of the day. So an impressive turnaround from Yokohama FC, but nothing impressive about the way they gifted Nagoya their equaliser in the 73rd minute. An ordinary passage of play from Yokohama FC's keeper and captain Yuta Minami ended with the Nagoya substitute Mateus firing home. But another substitute, Yokohama FC's Yuji Senuma, won it for the hosts 5 minutes later, sweeping home across Langerak for his first goal of the season. So, Sam, in recent weeks, Yokohama FC have been very, very easy on the eye, and they just carried on with that same pattern here. Some terrific goals in this game, and Yokohama FC ultimately a well-deserved win.
Yeah, I really like the way that Shimotaro has set them up. They're playing with the freedom that comes with no relegation. I think they're definitely enjoying the benefits of that. I thought they were the better team for most of this game, given how well Nagoya did play in midweek. I think it was a surprising performance from them. They weren't quite on it. But yeah, give full credit to Yokohama. They took their chances. They kept pressing. Senuma, when he came on, might have been the most unpopular sub that they'd ever had at Yokohama, when he wasn't the number 11 shown on the board. And no Kinkazu, but yeah, he took his goal very well. And I thought, they did mix and match a little bit. Matsuo was on the bench and he's been their best player this season. But you wouldn't have known it the way that they were playing first half. They, took their chances, a lot of pressing, a lot of energy. I just thought, they played really well and they deserve the 3 points.
Yeah, fantastic. Alan, so Yokohama FC, they'd come off the back of three straight losses, but they had been very easy on the eye, as I said. And this is a terrific result for them. But on the flip side, Nagoya, they're two steps forward and one step back, or vice versa, because, yeah, they'd done so well to beat Yokohama F. Marinos on Wednesday night, but then, fronting up against the, in inverted commas, easier Yokohama side, but they've been turned over.
Well, Sam will probably know more about the actual minutes played by the players I'm going to mention, but Yokohama FC were playing that game without Rokutan, the keeper, who had an injury near the start of the season, has missed a few games. Calvin Yongapin was up there, Maguinho, and I like Takeda, Eijiro Takeda as well. And all four of those guys are injured right now, and so I'm thinking they're a bit weak, and wow, they come out and play, as you say, with gay abandon, basically because there is no relegation, so the teams can help rebuild a little bit. And Senuma did say a lot about Kazu in his hero interview, which I presume that Sam wouldn't have understood or even perhaps seen, but he was like, yeah, Kazu-san did this and I scored for Kazu-san and Kazu-san always does this and he was great and Kazu-san is wonderful. Yeah. So Kazu, he was obviously making up for the fact that he came on instead of Kazu by mentioning him a lot in the hero interview at the end. It was quite fun.
Good stuff, yeah. So Yokohama FC, it's been, quite an interesting season. As we said, entertaining at times. They've obviously taken their lumps, but, they're obviously enjoying themselves back up in the top flight. And, a very impressive home win over Nagoya Grampus. Another team left to rue a missed opportunity, perhaps, in match day 16, was Kashiwa Reysol, who headed down to, as Alan mentioned earlier, resurgent Sagan Tosu, and came back home with their tails between their legs. At Tosu coming from behind to win 2-1 at home. Of course, no one surprised at the identity of Reysol's goal scorer in the 25th minute, Michael Olunga pouncing at the far post to score his 16th of the season after Ataru Esaka headed on a cross from the right. But Tosu got back into the game just before half time when Taiyo Koga brought down Daichi Hayashi in the box, and Hayashi netted for the third straight game after he sent Kim Seung-yu the wrong way from the spot. And so that sent the teams into the sheds at 1-1, and there was plenty happening at either end of the pitch straight after the restart. Esaka blasted a shot on goal from 25 yards that Tatsuya Morita had to punch to safety, but just 2 minutes later, Tosu went ahead when Riki Harakawa curled a brilliant shot across Kim and into the top corner. So you mentioned it earlier, Alan, with the, maybe a little bit of fatigue setting in, Gunba Osaka. Well, as we mentioned in last week's episode, Tosu have returned from basically a month away, and I guess you can tell that, they're the freshest team in the league because they've taken three positive results from their first three games back.
Indeed. And they're playing quite, I don't know, refreshingly. Again, probably a team benefiting from the fact that there's no relegation to worry about. But they had a few injuries, that, including Takeshi Kanemori, who was injured for about a month, and, of course, the coronavirus problems. But they have uninjured problems, as far as I know. If anyone knows any differently, I don't think they've got any injuries now, so they can pick a full strength team, and they look very good. I mean, they haven't even bothered bringing Keisuke Iwashita on yet.
Okay, yeah. Yes, indeed. All right, well, what did you think, Sam? I mean, Reysol will be frustrated here, but as we mentioned last week, I mean, Tosu were a breath of fresh air, and in their first game back, so I guess they've carried it on in midweek, getting that draw, and then, a really, really positive result for them again here.
Yeah, I think fresh is probably the best word for them. I thought, going forward especially, there was just a little bit more about them. Koyamatsu, I thought, was fantastic again. He was up against Takahashi and gave him, like, a horrible first 45 minutes. Takahashi was then subbed at half-time. He just couldn't deal with him. And Daichi Hayashi as well involved. Well, he got obviously scored the penalty. He was part of the forward line at the start of the season that couldn't hit a barn door for Tosu. They were dreadful. But he's come back. I don't know what he's worked on during the break, but he looks like a clinical finisher now. He's been involved in goals in each of the last three games. And I just thought, Tosu, a little bit fresher. Kashiwa on another day would have won this game. They had plenty of chances. Olunga had one before he scored where a Tosu defender plays a blind pass to him. And for whatever reason, Olunga, usually he's so composed, just rushed his shot. And that was the case on a couple of occasions. They'd gone up to a front two with Goya joining Olunga. It worked really well against Gamba in midweek, and it was working well to an extent in this game. But Goya, again, just not with the composure, just really snatched at a few chances. So on another day, I thought Kashua would have maybe got a point or even won this game. But Tosu, you've got to give them credit because, yeah, they've just come out with, perhaps it is a freedom that they've got now when after this break, no one really expects them to do anything, but they've got no relegation. They're just going for it a lot more. It's, yeah, just attacking. I thought Harakawa played very well. His goal was superb, curled into the top corner. But yeah, a lot of them, they're young players. Matsuoka is really impressive in midfield. So I just, yeah, I like what I'm seeing with Tosu. And if you had said to me at the start of the season that I'd enjoy watching Sagan Tosu play, I'd have laughed at you. But they've been really good the last three games.
Yes, indeed. And we should say that Raisol were inches away from an equaliser with 5 minutes left when Michael Olunga's header struck the Tosu sub, Ryoya Morishita, and hit the post, the ball rolling along the goal line before ending up in the keeper Morita's arms. He was wrong-footed by the deflection off of Morishita and was just basically watching in horror as he, I guess he expected the ball to roll over the line, but instead it rolled straight into his relieved arms. So, Tosu, another positive result for them, as we mentioned. Raisol, disappointing not to build on their win from midweek. And, they're seventh in the table, a point behind the three teams locked together on 27 points. And we're going to come on to talk about two of them in the next couple of games. They're Kashima and Urawa Reds, who joined Nagoya Grampus on 27 points after, I think it's safe to say, hugely contrasting away victories on the weekend. Firstly, on Saturday, Kashima visited Shimizu and a quick-fire double from Everaldo in the 29th minute and Sean Madoy in the 32nd made it to 2-0. In particular, you won't be surprised, I was very impressed by Doy's trademark ice-cool finish from the edge of the box. In the 32nd minute, the Prince scoring his fourth goal in the last four league games. Doy then fired against the post just 3 minutes later. And Everaldo spurned a couple of presentable second-half chances as Antlers tried to kill off the game. But Espols kept fighting, and the substitute Tirasil Dangda scored an excellent goal, firing across Yuya Oki with 10 minutes left to give the home side hope. But once again, Alan, a late Shimizu goal proved to be just a consolation as the Antlers won for the fifth straight league game. That's now six six straight losses for Espol. So, the teething problems continue under Peter Klimovsky. And unfortunately for them, they're just making a habit of scoring late goals when they're already 2 or 3 nil down in the game.
It's a problem, isn't it? I would say that Yokohama F. Marinos fans are probably thinking that they're possibly in the same position 2 years ago when everybody thought they were going to be, well, they did struggle, didn't they? Did they survive relegation by a couple of points or something? And then they went on to win the championship the next year. I'm not saying Espols are going to win the championship next year. And I'm not sure if the owners and the fans of Espols will have the patience to see if this system's going to work. But with six straight losses, I mean, they opened the season with five straight losses, and then they looked as if they'd settled in. They got three draws and two wins in five games, I think. They only kept one clean sheet in there, though, because they were still, you know, I think it's almost everybody is doing this now, you know, passing out and goal kicks and losing the ball often. But I think they've conceded about 20 goals in the last six games now, and they really are looking, they are struggling to keep clean sheets and scoring goals. I mean, the late goals are useless if they're three or four goals down, right? So I'm not sure Tirasen actually fits their system, and they've actually let Chong Tae-se leave to go to Albirex Niigata in J2. Because I don't think they're not really using sort of the big static man up front. And Peter Klimovsky, is that correct? Mm. He's persevering. And the players, I mean, some of them look very comfortable on the ball, but I think the fact is, especially at the back, they are being pressured, just like Marino's were 2 years ago and quite a few of the teams in J1 are right now. They're being pressured to not kick the long ball, and therefore they suddenly get under pressure, they panic a little, and they lose the ball. And which is why I was, you know, quietly pleased to see that Vissel Kobe actually started sending out long balls in the first half of the game last weekend. And Espoirs perhaps need to find a balance where they still play quickly and move the ball around and run around and keep possession, but now and again just hoof the ball up front and hope for the best, you know, because you know, patience is a virtue. But have the fans and the owners and the bosses got enough patience to see if this continues? What do you think, Sam?
Well, I agree with you. I think the way that they're going to cause their own downfall a lot of the time with the way that they pass it out. But I think what will worry Klimovsky more than that is, I think he'll accept those mistakes as they learn the system and as they try and build on that. But the space that they gave Kashima in this game, they started well for 15 minutes, but then from that until the final 15 minutes, it was just a procession of chances for Kashima, and no one was getting close to any player. It was so easy. Take the first goal, for example. Kashima have 4 or 5 passes, but they're under no pressure to play any of those. Leo Silva is given the freedom of the pitch to find Everaldo, and it was just too often. Kashima really should have been 4 or 5 nil up by about 60 minutes. The amount of chances they had, the amount of freedom they were given. And yeah, it's worrying for Shimizu that they only really click into gear, like, when the game is gone, pretty much. They have to be 2 or 3 down before they start playing. And it shows because they do create chances when they're switched on. And they score goals that so many times. This is just the latest in a long line of examples of late consolation goals. And you just think, why haven't you switched on earlier? It's just like, their heads go down once they concede the first goal. They don't really believe in what they're doing anymore. And then eventually they just, I don't know if it's just the manager has said something or they just find a bit of belief from somewhere. But then they click into gear. But yeah, I just think they're a way off even that Yokohama team that were poor in the first season. I don't see any areas of improvement in Shimizu. There was that period that you mentioned where they looked a better team, they got a couple of wins and a couple of draws, but since then it's just been pretty useless. I mean, the defending it's just awful. Like, you've got to show a bit of effort. I can understand if you make mistakes trying to play the way that you want to play, but really, for large periods of this game, the effort wasn't there, and that's unacceptable.
Yeah, and I mean, both of Kashima's goals, obviously coming in as they did in quick succession, came from Antlers winning the ball back pretty much on the edge of the Shimizu box. So, yeah, they were able to capitalise on pressuring Espoirs off the ball, and yeah, two good goals came as a result of that. And yeah, they should have been over the hill and far away by the time Espoirs got their consolation. But those 6 straight losses have now sent Espoirs to the foot of the J1 table, with the Belmare rising above them after their win away at Gunma Osaka. So, pretty rough times at Shimizu. They're taking their lumps in Peter Klimovsky's first season. Hopefully he will get a second for his methods to really start bearing some fruit. Of course, as we know, the J-League is, and especially J1, is such a league of momentum. So all it takes is one game to turn your form on its head, and then suddenly winning starts becoming a habit. So we certainly hope that Espoirs can turn their form around quick, smart, and that's certainly something that Sapporo are looking to do. They are now a stunning 9 league games without a win after an absolute barn burner at the Sapporo Dome on Sunday afternoon. It was a Sunday afternoon matinee, and it was jam-packed with drama, no question. Kenyu Sugimoto was handed a first league start since match day 9, and he took his chance with his first 2 league goals of the season to put Reds 2-0 up by the 20th minute. First, he stroked home a penalty in the 13th minute after Chanatip was, in my opinion, harshly judged to have brought down Takahiro Sekine. But then he was sent Sugimoto was sent racing clear by a long ball over the top by Takuya Aoki. Sugimoto holding off Ryosuke Shindo before finishing under Takanori Sugino. So 2-0 Reds after 20 minutes, but Consadole battled on, and their main man up front, Jay Bothroyd, bagged a quick-fire brace of his own just past the half hour to restore parity. A pair of headers from Bothroyd. First, he looped a header over Shusaku Nishikawa from Lucas Fernandez's cross in the 31st minute, and then just 4 minutes later, he rose above Thomas Deng to power home another header from 6 yards. So let's take a status check there, Sam, I think. 2-2 after 35 minutes. Obviously, we were hoping this would be an entertaining game, and the first half hour or so certainly did not disappoint.
Yeah, firstly, thank you to Sapporo, because they're the team that I have to watch it. This was 5:05 in the morning, so it needs to be a good game, yeah. And they always deliver. And yeah, this was, yeah, I don't think either team played well, but I thought it was a great game. I thought there were errors at the back for both teams. I thought, yeah, it was a little harsh, the foul that Chantip gives away, but he shouldn't be back as the right back in the first place. But when he's there, Sekine gets the wrong side of him, and more often than not, when he goes down, the referee's going to give a penalty. And Sugimoto took it well, but then the second goal, I mean, you shouldn't be beaten by a ridiculous, just a long, straight ball down. Like, Tanaka's the central of the centre-backs, and Kuroki just makes a little run into the midfield. Tanaka is completely taken out of it and leaves Sugimoto in. Shindo, I thought his defending was poor. I mean, I've said a lot of good things about Shindo over the last couple of years, but this season he's not been on it at all. And he was so easily shaken off for this goal. And yeah, it was just, that's what's causing Sapporo problems, because going forward, I mean, now that, at least in this game, they found a way to use Bothroyd. Previously, they were trying to play as if Suzuki was still there, and it wasn't really working. But this game, they got wide. Urara are so bad at defending crosses, and there were so many chances for Sapporo to score. Bothroyd got his two headers, both fantastic. The first one especially, just off balance, he's going away from goal. He manages to then flick it back over Nishikawa, a terrific header. But even before his second header, he hit the post with another one from a corner. And it was just every time the ball was played into the Urara box, there was a chance for Sapporo. And especially when you've got players like Fukumori, whose passing in this game was absolutely outstanding. But more defensive worries for Urawa, and same for Sapporo, but it made for a great game, and 2-2 was probably about right at that point on the balance of play.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, then we move into the second half. Sugimoto scored his third of the game, but unfortunately for Reds, it was into his own net. He headed Akito Fukumori's in-swinging corner in off Shusaku Nishikawa in the 67th minute to give Sapporo the lead. But just 8 minutes later, Reds fought back themselves. Tomoaki Makino netted from close range in the 75th minute. And the game headed deep into stoppage time and it looked set to end 3-3, it was Kai Shibato who broke Consadole Hearts with his deflected shot from inside the box. It bounced just out of Sugino's reach and into the net. So that's, as I said, now 9 league games without a win for Sapporo. Alan, yeah, they've just not been getting the rub of the green, have they, in recent weeks, the Sapporo? They've had games where they've utterly dominated but haven't been able to score. They would have expected if they could have scored 3 goals against Reds, they would have been able to get the 3 points, but even on this occasion, it was not to be.
Well, I've liked the way they play for years now. I think I mentioned it before, but when we had that little J prediction, I actually got them down as fourth in J1, what, 3 seasons back now? And I was very pleased that that happened. I love Chanatip, of course. And the first 10 games or so of the season, they were playing on the floor. As Sam said, they were, well, Suzuki's completely different to Bothroyd, for example. And so they were playing this very nice movement and passing and keeping the ball on the floor and spreading the ball around and working hard up and down. I mean, the fact that Chanatip wasn't right back for that penalty kick was actually tells me a lot about the fact that they were still working hard. And then, as I said on Twitter over and over again, that suddenly Bothroyd was playing more often, and the way they were playing when he was on the field was just not good. he just wasn't being used correctly. But because he was on the field and they were aiming balls at him and long balls, and he just brought the whole team down with him. And this game against Reds, they used him exactly as they should use a big man up front. And as Sam said, got down the wings, put the crosses in, and his two goals. I have to differ on the first one. I wouldn't say it was brilliant, but the fact that he actually got to the ball and managed to steer it back across, and then Nishikawa scrambling away there, it was quite funny to see. But the second goal was superb, classic centre-forward fighting header. And all credit to Jay for that one. But the fact that they can actually use him properly, and still the other 10 players or 9 players, if you don't count the keeper, are still playing around and not sending long balls up front, it worked very well. I know it was noticeable that when they brought on an extra big player at the end, near the end, that they seemed to lessen in intensity again. And I think the fact that if Bothroyd or whoever plays up front as a big man can be used properly, as they do now, Consadole can come back, because they didn't play that badly. And to me, all four of the goals were preventable. I mean, as we said, the PK was not necessarily a PK. Sugimoto pushed the guy out too easily. And then, I mean, Sugino should have had the ball for the third goal, I think it was. And then the fourth goal was just, how the hell did Quentin Martins get down there and then pull the ball back? And then it gave like two deflections and squeals across the line there. I mean, they weren't fourth. Well, yeah, I was going to say they weren't bad enough to let four goals in, but they were. But I mean, they scored three. I still have good things to say about Consadole, and perhaps in the coming games, they're playing against Gamba, Kashua, Abyssal, Vigalta, Sean and Belmare. I mean, there's five teams there that, on current form, are beatable. So perhaps Consadole can persevere and win some games in the near future, because, you know, I think they've got it, so...
Yeah, all right. Well, they're coming up against the juggernaut that is Sagan Tosu on Wednesday night, so they might have to wait another game before notching a long-awaited victory. But, yeah, what a game it was up at the Sapporo Dome. Reds ultimately triumphing 4-3, and as I said earlier, that sees them join Nagoya and Kashima on 27 points. So Nagoya fourth in the table on the goal difference, and Reds now sixth. In the table, this result saw Sapporo actually slip three spots down to 15th, which is obviously, yeah, very disappointing for them. But as Alan says, there are plenty of chances in the coming weeks to right their ship, and we hope they can do so pretty sharpish. All right, well, we have just one game left to review, and it was played up at the Yurtech Stadium on Sunday evening. Sendai hosted Oita, and the visitors Trinita were one of the teams to move above Sapporo in the table after a 3-0 away victory. Their main man, Kazushi Mitsuhira, was off target with an early header, but he turned in at the near post from Yuto Misao's cutback in the 34th minute to give visiting Trinita the lead. Sendai made a spirited fight back, but could not find a way past Mun Kyung Gun. Kei Chinen gave Oita a two-goal cushion with 10 minutes left when he held off for Simao Mate and lifted a fine finish over Jakob Slovic. Then Tatsuya Tanaka wrapped up the points in the 85th minute with a composed strike to finish off a Trinita breakaway. So, Alan, this is a highlight game by any stretch of the imagination. These two teams not particularly fashionable, but Trinita, that's a very creditable away performance from them, heading away from home and returning with a 3-0 win and all 3 points.
You're not wrong. They've... Again, they're another team that they've played quite well over the last six games where they haven't won, and I think they've only won one in the last 12 or so. They're not that bad, but I guess people have realised how they play. Manager Katano Zaka plays, he works them hard, he pressures the... They've got no real stars, no offence to the players there, but he makes them the sum of more than the parts, you know. So I think they've been perhaps found out a bit, and people have sort of learned how to play against them. But they're certainly a J1 team now. I mean, after after, I mean, J3, what, 3-4 years ago they were in J3, so it's quite an incredible turnaround by the manager, and the players have just, a lot of those players have come up with him. So it was a pleasure to see them to win, but Vegalta Sendai were just were quite dire at times. But they've had such bad luck with injuries. They signed Isaac Cuenca to be their main man up front, and he basically did his knee before the start of the season, and is still out. He must be coming close to returning, but then they lost Shima Mate for 5 or 6 games, and he's just come back, and he just doesn't look as if he's ready. He's not fit. And Shingo Tomita's out with a knee surgery as well, and Matsushita, who I thought was getting settled in nicely last season, Yoshiki, I know from his Kansai days, he's also out. And then Akasaki is quite a decent player, especially as, you know, as a late sub, and he's out now. And then Yuro Jermaine was out for a month, and now I think at the moment Yoshino and Hachisuka are both injured. I mean, I think named enough people to make a whole team, haven't I? So the fact is that they're totally disorganized, but not necessarily their own making. And the fact is that they haven't been able to put out a settled team. They've lost important players, and then basically it's a habit now that they've lost the confidence. Perhaps the dressing room is worried and gone because the manager is not changing things around, and they looks like they have, for want of a better word, the losing habit. I don't know. Sam may be able to analyse a little bit more.
Well, I have to agree. The injuries that they've suffered at the start of the season, they had a lot of injuries just going into what would have been the regular start of the season. And then since then, it hasn't got any better. And this defence was an absolute shambles, the team that they put out. I mean, Hirayoka is a regular centre-back. He'd missed the previous game, wasn't fit enough to play. As you mentioned, Hachisuka and Yoshino both out injured. So it was a ragtag back four that they played. Shimamate, as you said, was not fit at all. He looked so far and away worse than the way he played at the end of last season. I mean, there were the second goal, I think, was him just being shaken off so easily, and it wasn't the first time that had happened, and it wasn't the first time he'd been caught out of position as well. And then the left-back, Parra, who is a new Brazilian signing, he'd only really played one Levain Cup game before this game, and I mean, he was atrocious. You can see why they haven't bothered to play him. The third goal it was, where he is just jogging back. He has got no interest in getting back to help his defence out. Just, yeah, really poor. And he should have been the freshest of all of them, really. And just, yeah, they just gave up, really. They were at 1-0. They were in the game. They had a few chances. They didn't maybe get the look that they needed going forward. But once they went 2-0 down, it was, they kind of gave in. I feel sorry for... we've got a lot of J-League blogs. They're all fantastic. There's a Vegalta Sendo one that has started this season. And they must be wondering why they bothered to start this season, because it's not been great for a Sendai fan. They can't wait, I imagine, for this season to be over and they can restart next season, because the injuries they're getting, the way that the fixtures are, once you get into a rut of form, it's very difficult to get out of. And yeah, they're really struggling at the moment, and it's hard to see really where positive results can come from.
Yeah, fair enough then. Difficult times for Sendai, no question. But a very impressive 3-0 away win for Oita to wrap up our review of the J1 Match Day 16 slate. If you're wondering why we haven't spent a lot of time discussing the results from last Wednesday's Match Day 15, well, that's of course because Sam talked about them with John Steele on the Patreon exclusive video episode last midweek. So Oita, an impressive win, and they will be in action away from home again this coming Wednesday when they visit FC Tokyo, one of three rearranged fixtures for the ACL clubs. Again, they've been scheduled at home, so Tokyo will face Oita, and Yokohama F. Marinos will entertain Shimizu in the second Ange Ball Derby of the season. Both of those games have been pulled out of the Match Day 24 slate, and also from Match Day 25's fixture list, Kobe will entertain Cerezo Osaka. So a Kansai Derby on Wednesday night. That should be a fascinating clash. And we've already mentioned that Sapporo will be heading to Tosu for the rearranged clash from Match Day 12 that was obviously postponed due to the coronavirus situation down at Sagan earlier on in the season. And then after those four games take place on Wednesday, the 16th of September, we then have another full round of games coming up on the weekend. There are six games on Saturday, the 19th. And, yeah, the other three will all be played on Sunday. Looking at the games involving teams in the top four, leaders Kawasaki visit Urawa on Sunday evening. Cerezo Osaka host Kashima Antlers, so that's going to be a fascinating clash. And, in terms of fixtures for games of the round, then that is no doubt the front runner, I would suggest. Second hosting fifth. And obviously Antlers on a run of five straight league wins. Third place FC Tokyo host Sendai on Sunday evening, while Nagoya are at home against Kobe on the Saturday. All right, well, that's a pretty thorough look at the Match Day 16 results and a look ahead to what's coming up in the next week or so. So, Alan, before we let you go, is there any update from J Soccer Towers? What's happening with in terms of a new magazine or other irons you have in the fire?
Irons in the fire. Well, Sam will be happy to know that he's, for want of a better word, Japanesque shirt, as I've been calling it on Twitter, is on the way. Sam's ordered, I think it was a 3XL, was it, Sam? So, in my alter ego as J-League Shirts on Twitter, as opposed to J-Soccer Magazine, so much interest in the J-League community and all these limited edition shirts that people put out. And they're always so ridiculously high priced and such stupid limited editions. So we made our own. And those of you on Twitter who've seen it, it's at J-League Shirts, and of course J-Soccer Magazine is all promoting it. Limited edition of 100, and it literally went completely over the top on the Japan thing. So it's got Sakura all over it, Mount Fuji, Samurai Kanjis, the Japan flag. If you look very carefully, there's the Japanese black crow, although I can't technically say it's a three-legged crow because that's probably copyrighted. And even a samurai helmet is in there too. So we went totally over the top after looking at Jeff United's City View or Vanforay's Mountain Views or Polka Dots, whatever else people are putting out. So you'll either love that shirt or hate it, but please take a look on Twitter at J-League Shirts or J-Soccer Magazine. There are about 25 or 30 left in various sizes. And if you've bought one out there, please, as soon as you get it, take your picture and send it out. As for the magazine, well, we racked up the pictures. Sadly, due to various circumstances, I'm closing the J-Soccer Magazine office as such because it's, well, basically it's a warehouse or a museum anyway, and there's hardly any room to work in it. So sort of making a little warehouse instead and packing up all the shirts in boxes, and I'll be working from a new home in the near future. And hopefully, if we're sponsorless at the moment due to COVID-19 as well, of course. Anybody that was interested has put spending any money on the back burner. But if anybody out there wishes to sponsor J-Soccer Magazine, whether it's $20 or $2,000, please do get in touch because it's time a new issue came out. So I have absolutely no plans and no content in mind for the next J-Soccer Magazine. So please, on Twitter, if there's something that you'd like, literally from the Emperor's Cup non-league teams to Kawasaki Frontale's phenomenal success, or Vissel Kobe's black and white shirts, or their bold midfielder from Spain, anything you like, just let me know on Twitter what you'd like to see in J-Soccer Magazine, and I'll do it. And of course, anybody out there that doesn't know what J-Soccer Magazine is, why are you listening to this podcast? Please check it out, Twitter at J-Soccer Magazine, and ask me for a free copy. Why not? Just I'll send anybody out there a PDF of the last issue or three if they just get in touch, because it's, you know, basically my idea is to promote Japanese football. It's certainly not a business. If it was a horse, it would have been shot long ago. But so J Soccer Magazine, if anybody out there is not actually familiar with J Soccer Magazine, I am the editor and publisher. And please get in touch on Twitter at J Soccer Magazine. And I'll send you a free PDF. No big downloads. I'll send you a link so it won't block up your email or anything. And as always, it's a pleasure to talk about Japanese football on the J-Talk part as well. So thank you for letting me publish and promote my little wares. And Ben, you're a superstar.
Ah, terrific stuff, Alan. Thanks very much again for your time this week. Always great to catch up and take the pulse of the Kansai club. So, yeah, terrific to have you back on, and look forward to doing so again soon.
The pleasure was all yours.
All right, then. And, Sam, well, that's it for another week, then. You obviously have a lot more games to look forward to in the coming days. But, it's Sapporo early doors again for you on Saturday morning. So hopefully Consadole and Gamba will provide entertainment along a similar line to Sapporo and Reds from this past weekend.
Yeah, anything other than a 4-3 is a disappointment. But I'm really looking forward to this weekend's games. It's the first time back that they're going to spread out the kickoff, so I don't have to try and watch six at the same time. I can actually spread them out across a Saturday morning. So, yeah, it should be a really good weekend.
All right, then. Well, that is it for this week's episode of the J-Talk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank Alan Gibson for his time, our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon, and, of course, you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up the Match Day 17 slate. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J-Talk podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.